Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 9th. Joining us this morning, District Attorney for 6 months, Maggie
seven,
Fleming.
Seven.
Well, okay. After this show,
you got six. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe one after this show.
You've got the old Cheshire Cat move going on here, huh?
Yes.
Relief?
Maybe I don't know what Cheshire Cat
move.
Yes.
There's another reference that ends, it's a three-word phrase that ends with grin, that we probably shouldn't say on air. You're familiar with that one, too. Okay.
Man, I'm glad these aren't televised.
Yep. are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Yes, I am.
I wonder how we could define that phrase that we can't say. up a creek. Why do we say someone is up a creek?
I'm going to say because when the water rises, if it gets too high, you have no safe way to get away.
Pretty close.
Good.
Most rivers of England and Europe are fairly small. Even before the advent of modern highways, the rivulets or creeks of these regions posed few obstacles to travelers. Settlers in the New World found a different situation. Rivers such as the Ohio, the Mississippi, and the Missouri, were so mighty that even large streams seemed to be creeks by comparison. A hunter or explorer sometimes tried to cross at an untried spot. If he misjudged speed or depth, he might be trapped up the creek until rescued. Modern bridges have eliminated most hazards posed by flowing water. Yet a person whose feet are not wet may suddenly be caught up a creek, stuck in a dilemma from which it is hard to escape without assistance.
You know, that does still happen quite a bit around here with hikers that go down to the,
I think that's upper ocean.
That's true. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, the ones out at Shelter Cove last week?
Right. And we've seen them, up on the outside of Redwood National Park, as you go up towards Oreck, there's places up there, same sort of thing, where you can be in a beautiful cove, but if you're not watching...
Pay attention to the tide schedule, people. Yes. And the elk.
Yeah, and the elk.
Oh, boy. So it appears, and this is really weird, only about half the ballots have been tabulated so far?
Not even half.
Yeah, it's like... How can,
Change in the mail-in. It's the change in the fact that every single voter receives a mail-in ballot now. So it's just a matter of the percentages that now mail them in versus go to the polls.
And drop them off there.
Right. Yeah. And I was just checking because of, San Francisco. They're estimating more than half haven't been counted yet. But they also don't know how many they're going to receive.
He's getting creamed. I don't know if he can come back from that one.
Well, it's just so interesting, Jimmy, because here we know there are 20,000. Well, it's 19,000 and something. Roughly 20,000 ballots are waiting. They've been received to be counted. San Francisco, they're just ballparking what they might receive in that because it's good through June 14th as long as it's been postmarked. And I thought, postmarked by June 7th. And I thought, that's sort of fascinating. They're not even sure what their number is. But this is,
isn't that endemic of San Francisco?
Yes, it is. But it's across the state, because I've talked to other people, and particularly in races, that are close. People are sort of on pins and needles. But it is the reality of now that we have all these mail-in ballots coming in, and there's such a slower, more intense time-wise to count.
It's intriguing. I wish maybe Kelly was here.
Yes.
But you're kind of pinch-hitting, so that's okay. Oregon's been motor voter forever.
Yeah.
No, okay, not forever, but...
Right, for some time.
Their system, they have the finals squared up. Is there something in California that doesn't allow the tabulation as you go, just not the releasing of the figures? Or something else that could have come... A lot of us have been thinking, with all those polling, those voting machines that are all over the place... Put them all in one room and just sit there and feed the machines. And then you don't have to go running around and you get it processed through quickly. We saw that update from the elections office yesterday. Friday updates. What's that about?
Right.
Is it a low priority? Or, let's all hands on deck. Let's get this thing processed so that people can either get on with their lives or plan their lives and stop the elongation of this thing.
I wonder. I wonder what they could do. Because I thought of the same thing. Why couldn't they be feeding all along? You know, because we start, a lot of people vote the moment they get them. 30 days ago, they would have already put them in. So why can't we? I don't know. I wondered if it was just, I appreciate this, that they do not release any results till after the precincts close. Because I always think back
and that
to
makes
that,
100%.
Yeah, when President Carter conceded, you know, because of the numbers. But those of us on the West Coast were still trying to go vote. But I do think that that makes sense to just sort of have it all keyed up and then you can actually drop the number. So that would be an excellent question for Ms. Sanders.
Or perhaps when we get
the new one
next round, if nobody makes the the finish line, a question to ask. It procedural things can be addressed.
Right.
People things. Okay. Right. There's a little variability with that.
Right.
So what was the attitude in the office? Guarded optimism?
Yes. Very, you know, hopeful.
Very guarded optimism?
No, very, very hopeful. You know, it was very good returns. And, you know, I really appreciate it. It's interesting because everybody sort of expected a much higher voter turnout than we saw. And
yeah.
I didn't know why, given that it's June and that's traditionally not. It's pretty consistent, you know, because I looked at the numbers for the last couple. And obviously we see a huge surge when it's either the November presidential or, interesting enough, we had a pretty high number for the governor recall. But otherwise, we do have more voters, more registered voters, but the percentage only went up, I think, by about 1%. So,
have you heard anything, now that you're kind of independent and can wander and ask questions that aren't crossing any lines, how valid the voter the voter registrar is? All got friends who's either, their folks have died and they're still getting ballots,
right,
or people who haven't lived there and they're getting ballots, et cetera, et cetera. I wonder, you know, of that registered number, how many are considered the classic voter? They're here, that's their name, and they live at that address.
I wonder, that would be a good question, too, for Kelly Sanders. But I know, you know, we were all going door to door for Stacey, and I know a lot of people have moved a lot. So talking to someone, I mean, I had one guy who said, are you here to give me my ballot? And I said, no, I thought you had a ballot.
Yeah, boys, that sounded like a setup. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So what's going on in the courts? We had the judges' race also. Now, I don't know. Let's say things are as they currently present. When does Stephen start doing judge stuff? I mean, is there a monitoring, or can he shadow and kind of see that? Or is it one guy out, one guy in, and thank you very much.
And that varies, you know, from judicial seat to judicial seat. So for right now, Judge Wilson is still working. I understand in another month or two he's going to use up some of his vacation. So I don't know if he's actually going to vacate the seat. But if he did, then the governor could then say, you know, go ahead and start serving now. Where it's a little trickier for us is we recognize we can't really have Stephen in court. Because it wouldn't be fair, right? You know, how does the public defender negotiate against someone who very shortly will be wearing the black robe? So I'm gonna have him basically.
You know what that sounds like? A Monty Python sketch.
Oh, Okay, Brian.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're with me now. See?
But we've got a ton of projects in the office that he can work on and sort of keep him out of. Yeah, exactly. To make it a little bit more realistic. And then ideally, and this happened when Larry Killoran took the seat. I'm sorry, it's Killoran. I always say it the wrong way. When he took the seat, luckily for him, the judges said what would be great is if you want to come in as the commissioner for a few months. And then once he did that, he was able to go to the Judicial College and do all that. So he really was able to start having had that, that experience. That's not available right now. So, but of course, Stephen could shadow. He has obviously been in court virtually every day as a prosecutor. So I think he's
the view's a little different, yeah. I understand.
Exactly. So, but that's very exciting, and I know his family's very excited about it. So,
yeah, I know it's going to sound really weird. Is it a step up? It's a different step, but is it a step up? We don't know the pecking order of things. I mean, being a judge certainly has a certain imagery around it.
Right.
But is it?
So I guess it's just how you look at it. For me, I did not see it that way because I think prosecutors have such a critical role. And so to me, having good prosecutors and in very significantly having, a good elected district attorney is so important to how the criminal justice system fits. I think for some of us, too, when you're used to being the person in the courtroom doing, it's hard to imagine to be the one in the courtroom observing. Judges ultimately, with sentencing, with rulings, they're making decisions, but a lot of their responsibility is to be the observer, to be the referee.
And that keep it on the road, guys.
Yeah. That was never something that I saw as a step up. I saw it as something maybe you did when you got a lot older and wanted to step away a little bit. And then I think last but not least for a lot of us, it's a very it's supposed to be a very isolated job. And so you are making sort of a commitment to step away from what for most of us, part of being a trial attorney, being a prosecutor is, a very, very involved, active community, sort of choice. So those are some of the factors that I think. Really
isolated
weigh.
From the community or isolated? Your team is now 3 instead of 30.
Both, in the sense that you're not really, you can certainly still be, Judge Brown's a good example. He was still in Rotary, he was still very involved.
Right.
But you're not really quite as able to be freely in the community and participating and volunteering with a lot of, because it creates potentials for you to have conflict. And then as we know, with one of the members of our bench, you are supposed to isolate yourself from your former law firm or your practice or the public defender's office as it is. And that's not something everybody can do, but it really is what's required of the job.
Yeah, well, and particularly then if there's familial connections.
Yes.
it's you can't say, well, it's Humboldt County.
Right.
And ride that horse. I mean, it just doesn't fly. So, yeah, I would think.
The salary is definitely a step up. That's a huge jump for most of
Yeah, and it's a career if you want it.
Right.
You're there and you're locked in
right.
pretty much.
Yeah. Well, they run every 6 years, but I can't remember the last time in Humboldt County.
A contested race.
With an incumbent judge.
Unless there's a merging, like when they went from municipal to superior court, just being a singleton.
Right.
There was some of that, or they got rid of, who was the fellow that was the Arcata traffic court? What was out in Valley West?
Right.
Oh.
Judge Roland.
Yeah. Yeah, Ron.
Yeah.
When that disappears.
Right.
Okay, you're going to still be a judge or not? How are you going to handle that, depending on how the structure is? But there's been an awful lot of discussion about the structure, I guess, around the courts. Billy was talking about that during his campaign. Also, you've shared some insights over the past little bit also. When a new player comes in, they're the rookie. It's something that's different. But is there a chance to rework the structure a little bit, or is that pretty much determined at the state level and it's just kind of handled at the local jurisdictions?
They're a voting member of the bench, so you would hope they would bring some of their experiences being on the other side to talk about ways to perhaps improve, make it more efficient. particularly with the calendaring issues we see that really are very, very time intense for law enforcement officers and witnesses.
Yeah, a lot of the cops, there's frustrations
really
with.
Very unfair to them.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Maggie, with the challenges that are out there, when you see what the electorate said in San Francisco, does that give you hope?
It does. Oh, my gosh, yes. You know, we've all watched this sort of tide, and it's something that I don't really think those who push that agenda understand. For example, this notion of progressive DAs. California is already extremely progressive when it comes to criminal law and enforcement. So, for example, when someone says we need more diversion programs, California, in the codes, have more diversion programs than I can imagine anywhere else. So virtually every misdemeanor is entitled to diversion, except for a few exceptions, including driving under the influence. There are a huge number of other types of crimes that carry diversion at the felony level as too. We have mental health diversion. We have drug diversion. We have so many areas of diversion.
By diversion, you mean something other than jail time for whatever that was.
Something other than a conviction, something other than jail time, something other than this will, you know, affect your record in any way. So,
well, really, it doesn't even go on the record?
Right. Oh, my gosh, there's so much that we do.
Huh.
So when, you know, the voters say, well, this is what we want in place, what they're really saying is we want rules. We're demanding rules such that you're going to have a blanket rule rather than case by case. And that's the critical issue. You know, so when a progressive DA says, I will never impose a strike, as Chessa and Gascon have done, what they're forgetting is that there are these individuals who absolutely should have the maximum punishment brought to them because of their conduct, because of their ongoing violence, because of their ongoing criminal activity.
Well, they put themselves in the corner.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that's where voters have figured it out. When they start reading about people who, you know, have had series of violent crimes and they're still getting the same punishment that the brand new criminal is getting. They go, well, that doesn't make any sense, right? It doesn't make sense. And I think that's the biggest issue. When you run for office for DA, you get all these, we want you to answer these 20 questions, and then we're going to decide whether or not to support you. And it's fascinating.
From
ACLU, the Progressive Dems, whoever it might be. And they are. They say
different entities.
That, yes. Okay. They say, do you promise to never? You know, and the first one is, you promise to never try a juvenile as an adult. That one for me is the most shocking, because imagine you've got a 17-year-old, 11 months and 28 days, who goes out and shoots up a school. Do you promise you'll never try him as an adult? And the other issue they forget is it's not solely our decision. If I say I believe this murderer is capable, should be, you know, tried as an adult, what we do is we ask a judge to make the determination. And there's a hearing. And part of the hearing is a psychologist evaluates the minor. And that's when we really learn, you know, is this a psychopath? Is this someone who's so dangerous? Again, it's a case-by-case analysis. So when progressive DAs say, I will never, they scare me. Because you are removing
Same as I will always.
Exactly.
I mean, it doesn't.
Exactly. You are removing an enormous section of the code that is your responsibility to enforce for public safety. And that is ultimately the job of every DA, the community and public safety.
So these various entities that will put forth these questionnaires, are they that myopic?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Everybody has the issues that drive their endorsements. It's fascinating.
Because but nevers and always, I mean,
yes.
Absolutes just yes. don't exist.
Even they don't.
Black and white are
right.
shades. I
right.
mean, look at the whites and the paint count or the paint chips.
Yeah.
You 300 of them.
You can't be like that. But I do think some people actually believe that, you know, that those are the best ways to proceed, to have those rules. But I also think some of them just do it for purposes of getting elected. And that, to me, is the scariest part about when we turn this office into a political position, which it is you will have candidates who are running solely for the office, solely because they have political, you know,
influence.
They want to have that yeah.
Yep.
And they will say whatever it takes to whatever group they're in front of. And that, to me, is deceitful. And they shouldn't be allowed to do that. When you're running to be the chief law enforcement officer in your community, you should actually have to have the principles, you know, and the understanding and the integrity to say, I may not get elected, but I'm going to tell you the truth on this. You know, I don't agree with what you just said. I don't agree that we have absolutes, whether it be we'll never charge a strike, we'll never charge a minor as an adult. Those things are not absolutes.
I would tend to think that if absolutes were used, whether it's in the position you currently occupy or a political or even dog catcher, that would be a red flag warning for anybody and everybody that you can never say, you know, even if it's the most mundane thing,
right?
You can never say absolutely, absolutely.
Right.
And for people to ask those questions is a little telling also.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Boy, am I hedging. Oh, well. KINS, no, and I'm not positioning for anything in the future. It's 8:42.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, news and information time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So here we are. We think we know what the results are. When do you start allowing for some of the transitions, either for you to kind of step back, or now you've got a running partner to go to a convention that you normally would go by yourself, or some of the training stuff that the signature mm-hmm. of the department gets to do, and others may be aware of it, but it's not quite the same when it's not your responsibility. And then, of course, how do I find that in your computer?
Right.
That's the one that I am now playing with in my head, because I know where to most times find things. But, okay, I get taken out by a bus tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Can they really find it? Well, and how much time is it worth for me to make things a little bit simpler? That I, you know, some of those time management issues. When does all that fun start?
You know, we've already started that. And that was the part of making her the assistant DA, honestly. I didn't have an assistant when I first came into office. We were so short-staffed. We were so far behind with the charging and everything else. And it's a big part of why I just haven't had the opportunity to try cases, because I had to be in the office every day just shoveling as fast as I could.
Administrating.
And administrating, but yeah. also cleaning up and hiring. You know, I've interviewed.
Well, that's all part of
right.
ownership.
It is, but particularly because we were so far behind. I mean, I came into the office, there were only 10 prosecutors, and only three of them had been there when I left 3 years before. So it was a very young, inexperienced office, and then I had to, you know, hire to get us back up to 18. So, but Stacy was senior for a while, and then she became the assistant DA. And as soon as she started, I started saying, let's sit down, and I want you to understand the budget, because, you know, if I'm not here tomorrow, it's your responsibility. So she's done all that.
Guess what you signed up for.
Yeah. She's handled a lot of the personnel issues. She's handled, you know, she understands all the grants. And the other part of it is, you know, where is it on the computer? I know I've said this before, but Rochelle Davis is the brains of the operation, the business manager. She knows where everything is, and she's excellent at really understanding, you know, the data. She, you know, when I say to her, have, you know, now that we have this elder abuse unit, what are, have our numbers gone up? Because it feels like that. She can break it all down for me, and then we can look at.
So she's your statistician.
She's everything. Okay. She's everything. If I could get her a bar card, she'd run the court, too. She's phenomenal. So we've already really, I mean, that's part of it, I think, you know, sort of succession plan, but also just having a really well run office is having other administrative positions that really do understand every aspect and can handle those. And I know Stacey Eads is more than ready, and she already has been for some time.
So it's kind of like pre-management, well, management training,
right?
For
yeah,
potential succession.
But you also, you want it because it would be great to go on a vacation and not actually be on your phone. Yeah, on your phone. And that's the funny part. I think I've shared with you. I've gone, you know, on vacations, and we tend to like to be out, you know, and so no internet, no cell phones. And it's like, okay, I got to get in the car and drive to where I can call, make a call, make sure everything's okay, you know. And once she was really stepping into that role, it became a lot easier for me to say, ask Stacey, I'll be gone. So it's good. You know, it's really good. It's a relief.
We'll be putting that one to the test in a couple of days here.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right, Winston, don't call Mom.
Yeah. You going on vacation?
We're going to see a couple missions.
Oh, great.
Angie wants to see some missions down south of the Bay Area.
Have you ever gone to Carmel?
I'm either driving or I'm armed candy. I'm not sure which yet.
Right. Yeah, the Carmel, it was one of my parents' favorites. And it's,
well, San Rafael is kind of a cool one, too. I think we're going to see that again. Just, but to tap into some of that part of our history in the area.
Right,
It'll be interesting to see
you
know, some of that kind of stuff. But, yeah, vacations, if you're still tapped in, aren't really.
No, you're never off the clock.
The thing that is bizarre for me, and I don't know if you're able to do this, 2 weeks?
Right.
Have you ever taken a 2-week vacation?
Not since.
Yeah,
I got elected.
Okay. Yeah.
I did before.
Were you able to?
Yeah, before I became the elected DA, there were a couple, and I would block it off, you know, way in advance. I'd keep my calendar clear. I'd make sure I didn't have any trials set, and I would let everybody know that these weeks here.
These are inviolate.
You won't be able to reach me, you know, for the same reason I said before. It's part of me is. When you go on vacation, you go camping, where you really do get to just stop the noise of electronics and TV and all of that.
You're more worried about mosquitoes and crawly things. Yeah.
Right.
Which is why we don't go camping. Yes. There's a reason God made hotels. Oh. So as things get closer, I would like to think that there's plans in place, and towards the end, you're just going to be kind of twiddling your thumbs and, you know, be the resource that's on call kind of thing.
Yes, yeah.
You didn't get to experience that, though, did you?
Not really, yeah.
So you're not going to be plugging up toilets or doing any, you know, hiding the computers or some of the things that we hear about at the state and the federal level?
Right, no.
Are there requirements that district attorneys that are going to be, you know, there's going to be turnover that you have to do? You know, forms that have to be signed, things of that nature that formalize it? Or is that just kind of part of the swearing in?
As part of the
packet,
swearing in,
so
right.
To speak.
And then in any office when you enter, you know, you there are forms you have to fill out with regards to, you know, I promise not to use
clats
to run my neighbor's license plate, you know, things like that. I mean, that's just part of the job. But otherwise, no, you're sworn in and.
In showtime. We'd change the locks on the door, right? Or at least I've heard that might be in the offing. I'm not sure. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.